Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impulga, and this evening we'll talk about political transitions in Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Patrick Deya. Patrick Deya is joining us from somewhere in Washington. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Douglas.
You're welcome. My other colleague is John Tanza of South Sudan in Focus. John, welcome back to the show once again.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. And joining us from Burkina Faso shortly will be Issa Nepon. He's a news anchor and reporter with Burkina Faso's Public Radio and Television Broadcasting Corporation, RTB. He'll be joining us momentarily. We're still trying to get connection with him. And joining us from Durban in South Africa is Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst and a regular panelist of this show. Suleiman, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, being to the listeners.
Thank you very much. And once again, gentlemen, welcome to the show. And as I said, our topic tonight is going to be transitions, political transitions in Africa. This week in Burkina Faso, authorities there have appointed an army officer, Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida, as a transitional prime minister. Colonel Zida had been among officers who took power when the then president, Blaise Compaoré, was forced to resign on 31st of October during the mass protest. And then now they have a new president, the former prime minister, Michael Kafando, as interim president. Maybe I should start here in studio. People were calling for the quick transition to civilian rule, but this one seems to be a mixed bag. The army man now is the prime minister transition. Won't this give the army a lot of leeway in directing the transition?
It depends on the powers, because at the end of the day, it boils down to who calls the shots. Is it the prime minister or the interim president? Mm-hmm. Now, the interim president was a former prime minister. And he's the guy the guy who's been in the mix. He knows what has been happening in the country. The military guy, of course, you cannot just dismiss him that he doesn't know what is happening in the country. Mm. But he's a new kid on the block. And so if the powers are with the military guy, then it's not a, you know, if you like, politically correct transition. Yeah, but if the powers are invested in the interim president, then that's a good start. Mm-hmm. Because from there, you can see that things are moving in the right direction. And remember, this interim president will not contest in the election.
That's true.
Yeah. So he's there to just be like a caretaker until when it's elections time, and whoever wins the elections will take over the office.
Suleiman in Durban, normally from experience on the continent, whoever controls the transition normally directs, give the sense of direction to the next government coming into power. What's your general take on this arrangement now?
It is a very difficult arrangement, Douglas. Very confusing. But at the same time, it shows you how much the dictator has destroyed the country's fabric, that by the time they leave, there is a huge vacuum, there is a constitutional crisis to the extent that the country doesn't know which direction to take. It is between destruction and some vague transition like the one which we have. Because for sincerity, they are putting the soldier maybe to cover up some of the atrocities, some of the repressive actions which they have been which have been going on during Compaoré's time. Otherwise, what should have been an ideal situation like what happened in Liberia under Sawyer, when you have got a transition, is to have a transition by civilian technocrats who can set the economic foundation for the country, the political foundation for the country, and the social development for the country. There is no need for a soldier. The soldiers can stay out, though it has been claimed that for the sake of cohesion, we had it be left there. Otherwise, it would have been ideal to have a technocrat-based administration which should set the foundation for a proper, free, transparent election and a future laying a foundation for a future government which can take up from where the dictator left the country.
Patrick, any comment on that sort of...
I agree with the gentleman because, again, just by the mere fact that there is a wing of the army involved, armies are supposed to protect the country from outside forces.
Yeah.
And I think symbolically just having an army person there tells you that there's definitely, you know, there's some rough waters underneath whatever is happening. And again, maybe they're doing the best they can with what they have. But as somebody alluded earlier on, usually the transitions in Africa have been not, you know, very few of them we can say have been a transition that would be looked at as something that we would like to see established. And they may not be perfect, but when you look at the transition when Mandela, you know, came to power, even the first time when Mandela came to power, getting it from the former president, and then after that, Thabo Mbeki coming in, and then Zuma. It looks like something is working, and it's from either whether it's from the party people or some technocrat. There's some idea that something is working. In this situation where there has been a riot and a former president has been chucked out, there's a lot of confusion, and so I don't know whether we can have for hope, probably, for whatever circumstance it is. But transitions in Africa have been, you know, kind of very, very questionable. And I think until such a time that strong institutions are established in these countries that are moving towards democracy in some sense or another, until we have a transition that is done by, and I agree, with technocrats, people who are professionals who make the government run behind the politics, then it's going to continue to be not something that is very ideal.
I see. John, what?
Well, I would say I agree with Suleiman and my friend Patrick, but I really want to say that we sound quite dismissive when there is progress. The case of Burkina Faso is a success story for Africa because Africa has been known as a continent where leaders stay in power, they want to die in power, and when they remove the countries sometimes go up in flames.
Right.
What happened in Burkina Faso is a smooth transition, although there are some dynamics that are not clear there, but it is something that we should really applaud and say, if other countries could follow suit, I think the continent will be stable.
I think the point is, at what point do we start to... Because you see, the whole problem is that the previous leader, Compaoré, was in power for 27 years with no intentions of ever handing out power. Now, what makes this transition more complicated is that the people said no to him. He had to take off and flee to Ivory Coast, leaving a vacuum. Which vacuum now is trying to be sorted out by the army plus the civilian opposition and civil society, and they're trying to tow some delicate balance. But Suleiman, from further to John's point here, the army has never been known to transition properly to civilian rule.
Actually, they don't even transition. If you look at the continent, the majority of them who came as liberators, they are still there. Debbie is still there. Bia is still there. Our friend in the small country.
Rwanda. In Rwanda?
No, Rwanda is still there. Uganda is still there.
Mubarak just
Africa.
Left.
Asias is still in Eritrea.
Is still there. Since in 1990, Chad has been ruled by soldiers. In 1982, it was Debbie and Hessen Habre. After that, after Habre, 1990, Deby took over. From there, when the constitution was ejecting him, he changed it. He's still there. Seven changed the same constitution. Kagame, Kabila. So they don't transition. I think what Burkina Faso has shown us is that, number one, staying in power does not add value to a country. The more you stay does not necessarily mean that you'll be more productive or you'll be more, you add value to the country's social, political, and economic development. Number two, staying in power does not make you more popular. By Burkina Faso, it has shown us that the continent is not only tired, but it is fed up. Much as we appreciate the role of the soldiers, the Burkinabes would have been happier if there is no military uniform, because the person we are talking about, Lieutenant Colonel Zidi, was within the ruling class together with the Compaore. So which means the very person they have chased is still there. It is unprecedented. Yes, we agree with them. They are trying to do the best out of the confusion which is there, not to break into Libya or Ivory Coast or Central African Republic or Somalia. They are trying to avoid it. But we don't know even whether tomorrow there won't be a division within the army itself to go against Colonel Zidi himself. So the situation is still fragile. Let's pray for Burkina Faso. Let's see what is going on. We hope it will be the positive way.
Patrick, I think the crucial point here seems to be, you alluded to this earlier on, is that the longer the leaders stay in power, the more they destroy the institutions, national institutions, the police, the judiciary, all the organs of the country, of the state, that would make it possible for a smooth transition.
And that is true. And specifically, I think they do it very deliberately to be able to control all those centers of power just so that they can stay in power. Now, look at I'll give you an example of Kenya, where when Moi there was a transition between Kenyatta and Moi, which it was really not a transition, it was political maneuvering and all that. But the very first transition that one can say that happened in Kenya was after Moi took Kibaki, the very first election when Kibaki came in. Moi handed over power to Kibaki openly. Open field, everybody there. He's given his escort after he hands over power. There's all the ceremony, and he's gone and he's retired. He's given his benefits and whatnot. People saw that working. Now, what did Kibaki do once he was in there? He centralized everything, and the next election, there was no transition. He was sworn in the darkness, you know, because, again, he had completely destroyed everything that would have been a wonderful continuation from, the last election. That has tailspin, you know, made Kenya into a tailspin. Look at, places. We can't say that Mubarak transitioned because he was just out of power. We cannot. This transition right now that we're talking about, again. Yes, as Tanza says, we need to look for the positives, but we cannot be blinded by what really. At this point, it's more of a convenience, and of course, we have to be hopeful that things will work well. But historically, they've not. The gentleman before outlined all these places that have not. Museveni is still here. When people came, people were, wow, he had all these grandiose ideas about democracy. He destroyed that, chipped it at it until now. He literally runs the country single-handedly. It's crazy.
I see. Well, Suleiman, hold your thought. Let's take a short break, and then we'll come back to continue our discussion of political transitions in Africa.
African Music Mix. Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best. Tune in from 0 to 300 hours UTC and from 11 to 1300 hours UTC every single day on the Voice of America.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is political transitions in Africa. And our panelists are my colleagues, John Tanz of South Sudan in Focus Program, and Patrick Deya. And we're supposed to have been joined by Issa Nepon of Burkina Faso's Radio and Television Broadcasting Corporation, RTB. Unfortunately, the lines were, well, I would say, undemocratic and unwilling to join. But we also have a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, joining us from Durban, South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, here in Studio 9. Before I went for that short break, Suleiman, I want to respond to Patrick.
Yes. Actually, what is most touching is that at the moment, Douglas, the continent is being held at ransom by illegitimate gunmen all over the continent. You move West Africa, you have Biya, you had the Compaoré, you had the Yaya Jame, you have Idris Deby, then you come to East Africa, you have got to say, okay, let me zero in first from East Africa. Number seven, 27 men, almost half of them non-Ugandans, because some of them, the Rugema and the Kagame, the current president of Rwanda, were part of that group. 27 men take up guns and go to the bush to fight an elected government, whether it had rigged election or not. They went on themselves. There was no referendum to appoint them, to tell them, no, you can volunteer. They went on themselves. They go into the bush. They cause havoc. They kill people. There is collateral damage. There is confusion. Eventually, after killing many of their opponents, they walk into power, and they say they have liberated the country. Who gave them the authority? Which the political parties by then, the major political party by then, when they were going to the bush, did not even sanction their going. Instead, the political party had accepted it, and they went to parliament and sat to parliament, which means they had their own interests. But after they had come in power, they called themselves liberators. They say the other people killed, the other government was killing people. But they are the ones who killed them, because the other people didn't survive. So they themselves are illegitimate. They have no cause to be in government. Then from there, they start succeeding themselves. There's a transition from 7 to 7. 10 years, from 7 to 7, 20 years, from 7 to 7, 30 years. After causing chaos in Uganda, they go into Rwanda. Cause the same havoc, overthrow the government, the other people are killers. From there, they go to DRC, they cause the same havoc. They are the transition which are being held are themselves transitioning to themselves. So they are illegitimate. Then we go to Chad, the way I was saying. It was Hissène Habré, together with Idriss Deby. After that one, Idriss Deby goes to takes over from Hissène Habré. Then he stays. Then he's succeeding himself. He changes the constitution like Ben Seven and others. He continues to be there. Yaya Jame continues to be there. Biya continues to be there. I mean, the whole continent, these gunmen are succeeding themselves. They are illegitimately there. We should not even talk about them transisting to anybody. They are supposed to be overthrown the way Compaoré was overthrown and sent into the dustbin. Actually, Douglas, these people need to be tried for the atrocities they have committed against their countries, including Compaoré.
Yeah, let's talk about the role of because there's some pressure on Burkina Faso to have a quick transition back to Libyan rule. Now, following up on what Suleiman is saying, should leaders who have been thrown out of power, chased out of power, be held to account?
They should be held to account, because a lot of things that they have done were done out of their personal interest. Yeah. You know, some of them go to power for personal motivations, because if you ask a lot of people in Africa today, why do people join politics? It's all about money.
Yes.
People want to become rich.
Yes.
People want to buy land. People want to drive nice cars. People want to enjoy life. That's why they go to politics. They don't go to help and serve the people they represent. Africa is lacking servant leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We have a leadership that shows itself in selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
We have selfish leaders. It's too sad to say that, but that's the truth.
So, Patrick, then the people themselves, the African people, there's a saying that you get the leaders you deserve.
Yeah.
What should they do to make sure that, because if the transitions are a problem, because in some countries, as just mentioned, some leaders have been in power for 30. In Angola, it's, I think, 34 years or so. People can be in power for 34. That's a lifetime.
I don't know, but I don't know whether one would say that we are not still politically mature to know that. But I think it's one thing that, for me, I think it's very glaring, is that every election time, or whoever these people that come into power, first of all, they establish very strong self-made institutions that can support them. And the people are left powerless. Most people, all they want to do is to be able to feed their kids, take their kids to school, and live a normal life. Mm. And if, you know, that there is an indication of that can be severely disrupted, that people tend to be just flow with it. And that's why I think people like Museveni can be able to stay in power for that long. So I don't know. The Arab Spring, a lot of people were hoping that it would spread to the sub-Saharan. It did not, because, again, there are different variables that made the Arab Spring possible. A lot of this, they're monolithic. They have one thing in common, maybe the religion or their language. Mm-hmm. A lot of sub-Saharan countries don't have that. So I'm at a loss in one could say education, but you see, this country's Zimbabwe has the highest literacy rate in Africa. So why has Mugabe been there for all this time? Again, I think it's this, you know, being afraid of stoking the fire and burning the country, and people, you know, if they can eat, they just ride on.
Yeah, you see, John Tanza, we can't only blame it to even the youngest country on the continent, South Sudan, because if you can't arrange for transition early, South Africa did it. Mandela was there for a brief time, one term, passed on the baton to another person, and things moved on.
But you see,
that doesn't seem to be happening in South Sudan.
Yeah, because what happens in a place like South Sudan is when late Dr. John Garang was leading the Sudan People's Liberation Army and movement, he was leading it single-handedly. And when time came for signing the peace agreement, that is when the now president, Salva Kiir, started coming up in the limelight. That's when people knew that, there was a deputy chairman in this party. But before, we never knew of his deputy. And so when he, you know, died in the helicopter crash, there was a problem. But the leadership
People say, Ajwaka, the problem still exists up to today.
The leadership came very fast to fill the gap. The SPLM decided to say, look, Salva Kiir is the right person to step in his shoe.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did that, they started fighting each other in 2013 within the SPLM, within the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Some people said, no, you have overstayed as the chairman. He said, no, I did not overstay. We need to call for a convention, a party convention. And the party convention could not be held because of several factors.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, it's the leadership struggle. People want to remain in the chair forever and ever until they are incapable because of death or disease.
I see.
But that's the nature of politics.
Yeah, in the remaining 1 minute, Suleiman, if you look at the continent, most of these countries actually had constitutions. Though they start up with constitutions that have term limits for presidents. But they are very good at changing those constitutions or ignoring them and continuing ruling as long as they want. What ought to be done in the last one minute, can a organization like AU force countries to have term limited presidencies?
First of all, Douglas, all these regimes which have been in power for over 10 years, they're inherently corrupt. They are naturally repressive. They are there for themselves. By the fact that you spend 10 years and you have not groomed someone to take over, it shows that you are naturally greedy and you did not go to build a country. Otherwise, it doesn't need you 20 years to build a successor. So what has to be done? The international community need to know that these leaders whom they are helping with loans and military assistance, for whatever reasons, they are not helping the countries. Those particular leaders are going to collapse with whatever little they have built. Luckily enough, they have not built much, but they will collapse with the country. So the international community itself needs to wake up and start close the tap for aid and insist that in order for a country to get loans and aid, there has to be a political settlement. There has to be a political future for that country. There has to be sustainability, not fragility. Because if the country is fragile, it is meaningless to give the money because that money is siphoned out. Number two, it will need a lot of courage from the young people of Africa to emulate those ones in Burkina Faso and know that if they don't fight these dictators, if they don't go on the streets and burn those parliaments and their houses, it is their future which is at stake. The countries are rotting. The European countries are closing up. South Africa is closing up. The young people are locked up now. They don't know where to go because unemployment is high. The countries are rotting. There is no future for them. So, number two, the youths of Africa have to have courage and fight back. The international community has to help us, and then maybe we can have a step forward. Otherwise, with this group of dictators whom we have on the continent, there is no hope at all.
Well, I think Tanga, it's the people have to try themselves, and the international community can only do so much because, as
if the international community hits where it hurts, they will respond. Like their pockets, hit their pockets, they will respond.
Yeah.
The problem is they are being handled with the kids' gloves
because the international community, so-called international communities, there are some mutual benefit.
There are issues of national interests. I mean, you scratch my back, I scratch your back.
Exactly. And that's why the closure of aid to Rwanda stopped the war in DRC within 1 month.
Okay, gentlemen, we have run out of time. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleagues, John Tanza of South Sudan in Focus and Patrick Dare, and Suleiman Mvula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Douglas. It's always a pleasure being here.
You're welcome. Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Michael Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any part of this program, you can listen to it on the internet by going to our main website, clicking on programs, and scrolling down to Reporters Roundtable. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.